This is the Live Your Edge podcast, episode 8. This is your host, Gilbert Joa. Today I'll be talking to Benjamin Low. Benjamin is based in Singapore and has spent the last 11 years as a public speaking coach. Today's topic is about why millennials need to learn public speaking in the coming decade. We're going to talk about some of the biggest hurdles when starting out, and also some of the best tips that you can get to elevate your career by learning public speaking. This is Gilbert. Welcome to the podcast. Let's get started with our guest interview. Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning into today's podcast episode, Why Millennials Should Learn Public Speaking in the Coming Decade. With me, I have Benjamin Low, who was born and raised in Singapore and spent the last 11 years as a public speaking coach with clients like Bank of Singapore, EXA, the Monetary Authority of Singapore, as well as the Japanese government, helping fintech founders making sure they're ready to pitch their companies. And one of the topics that Benjamin talks about in his keynotes is millennial engagement. He also published his first book at 27 years old, interviewing Asia CEOs on public speaking. He's been featured in over 60 times across 10 different media platforms. Thank you for being on the show today, Benjamin.
Hey, Gilbert. Thanks so much for having me on your set, and I look forward to sharing my journey as well as my insights with you.
So jumping right in, how did you get started as a public speaker? Because public speaking is typically, if you hear about the biggest fears that people have, public speaking is up there, and some people say it's even more feared than death itself.
Yeah, totally, right? So there are several versions to how I started. So I think I'll start with the one that's probably the most, that's closest to me. What I do tell a lot of people is that I would be typically the last person you would ever imagine to be on stage. Well, I think particularly because of two reasons. One, from 7 to 17 years old, I grew up as a serial bully victim. So in school, I was a victim of physical bullying, emotional bullying, and I never really had a strong self-esteem. Well, I always saw myself as if there was a metaphor of a bus, I would be in the passenger seat. I would never be the one in the driver's seat. So in school, in life, in society, in my social circles, I was always the quiet one, right? So that was how I grew up. I was a bit awkward in social situations as well. So in spite and despite all of that, how did my journey start? I think it started first when I think the seeds of speaking was first planted when I grew up as a fat chubby boy, but I was good in school, I was good in academics, but I never really found what I really enjoyed doing. Well, I mean, typical Asian kids, I mean, Gilbert, you probably can relate to that. No, we study so much and I'm good at school, but I don't know what I was meant to do. I was happy to do and I was enjoying and in terms of a passion. But I do recall one day when I was about 7 years old, I returned home and my grandma was at home as well, my then grandma. And I noticed on the television, they were screening the inter-varsity debate. And I still recall vividly, it was an afternoon, and I didn't know what happened. I was just so inspired by how the university students could take up a microphone, could put their points across, could be so confident. They had a radiant smile on their faces and they were just so smooth on stage. And I think that was my earliest and the faintest recognition and recollection of how I wanted to do something that would involve me sharing a message, me in front of a crowd of people and me sort of trying to entertain, inspire people. So that was how really my journey started from a conceptual point of view. But
Realistically, I started doing this work when I was in my first year in university, doing a blend of speaking, training, and coaching. And I started out trying to find places where I could get stage time. Well, stage time is basically, you know, time you spend on stage. And speaking, as with any other skill, you do need to invest time. So the first safe place that I got stage time was actually on at Toastmasters, where I won a couple of competitions, and I put that into my resume, and slowly but surely, you know, it started out my speaking career. And I think for the past 11 years, it's just diving into this whole state onto this stage, as well as, you know, sharing my insights. And yeah, that's the gist of how I started.
I admire your journey, because I remember I had a very similar, I was not, for myself, I was not a good student, actually. I didn't like to study, but I remember when I was in the third grade and I was sent to one of the English teacher's office, and she told me that I was being sent to ESL, which stands for English Second Language. Now, I was born and raised in New York, right? So, and English is my native language. So if I'm being sent to English Second Language, you can imagine what that kind of did to my self-esteem. And I was not really good in my English studies as well. I did terrible on my SATs, so probably did like on the bottom percentile. So I would never think that public speaking would be for me. And I also had to experience watching some idols or role models on a television screen or in person. And that sort of inspired me to also pick up the mic. So actually, which brings us to our next question, which is, what are your idols or role models in this space?
So I think from where I run my business from and where I'm operating at, I'm based in Asia and specifically in Singapore. And what I do basically is I travel around the region to speak. I happen to be part of a global speaking organization. In Singapore, we call it the Asia Professional Speakers Singapore. It's actually part of the Global Speakers Federation, the GSF. So at the APSS, I count several sort of speakers as my role models or people whom I say, hey, you know, I want to be like him or like her in 10 to 15 to 20 years' time. So it's helpful that I started out this whole speaking thing when I was much earlier on, so I do have a longer runway. But to answer your question straightly, I think there are two speakers particularly. I mean, one, his name is Frederick Haran, and he's a global speaker that's based in Singapore, but he travels around the world to give speeches on innovation, on creativity, on this concept of a one connected world. So I look up to him specifically because I think he embodies the whole spirit of adventure as a speaker, right? So in terms of this whole speaking world, there's usually two school of thoughts. One, you have that one speech, you perfect it, and it's going to be your call to signature speech. And then the other school of thought is where you constantly iterate. You think like a startup founder, and you constantly bring in new elements. And the reason why I look up to Frederick so much is he embodies both school of thoughts, right? He's a master on stage. So if you look at him on stage, or if you ever have a chance to listen to him speak and present about his insights, you'll totally be blown away. But at the same time, he doesn't rest on his laurels. It's always like spending a good 3 to 6 months of time innovating, researching, finding out new stories to tell. And I think he's just relentless in terms of like trying to be a better speaker. So that's one, Frederick Haran. The other speaker that I really look up to, his name is Ron Kaufman as well. So he's also likewise based in Singapore, but he travels and he speaks globally as well. So he has this book called Up Your Service. Another phenomenal speaker, amazing energy on stage, and it's just like a live wire. So I think the people that I look up to on stage, I think they all share a common trait, which is I think speakers tend to live a very, I think sometimes very one-dimensional life. Like, for example, on stage, we try to be, we sometimes are this amazing superstar.
But I think the real crux of this career is, you know, how do you continue to live your life downstage and behind the scenes? So I think these two speakers sort of represent an epitome of hard work, of like continual innovation, of trying to outwin and better themselves day after day. And I think for these reasons, you know, these two speakers are always top of mind whenever I think of people that need to inspire me to greater heights for the world of speaking.
Wow. And speaking of having a different sort of world between onstage and offstage, how big of a difference is it for you? Because for me, sometimes when I'm on stage, people say I'm lively, energetic, but when I'm offstage, sometimes I don't want to be too like all over the place, and sometimes I just prefer to spend time by myself. And how's it like for you?
Yeah, so I think specifically, I think if you look at the dichotomy between onstage and offstage, and we're sort of getting a bit philosophical here, I think that there are usually two components that I think would be key, at least for my personal growth. I think one is the message that you preach, right? So for example, when I'm on stage, I speak about and on millennials, and sometimes when I speak to millennials as well, I tell them that you know, the common message of how I had a friend who committed suicide at 27 years old. Life is precious. Are we living a life in a way such as intentional, that is deliberate, that is meant to help you to discover who you are in life, what you're meant to do, and why you do what you do? You know, all this kind of life messages in a more inspirational tone. And the first point about this congruence is in terms of the congruence in terms of the message you put out there. So I always ask myself, am I living the kind of life in accordance to the kind of messages I put out on stage, right? So when off stage, you know, I try to also tell myself that, hey, my world is not just about speaking. My world is also about discovering. My world is also being a better husband, being a good son, and also keeping myself continually growing and developing, reading more books as well. So I think that's the first part. I think the second part that you alluded to was that personality part. I think personality is a tricky thing, because sometimes your personality off stage may not be the best or the most conducive personality that you can have or should have on stage, right? So for example, when I do speech coaching, some people are naturally very, very shy, introverted, or reluctant to connect. And I think those are natural inhibitors when you have those sort of that side of personality when you put up on stage. So I think congruence for me in terms of personality, I think it's a more slightly nuanced issue, and for me, I see myself as introverted, and I tell slapstick humor. I can tell humor with a straight face, but at least I never try to be someone whom I'm not on stage, right? So at least Gilbert recognizes that he's bubbly. You have that side to you, but I'm never that rah-rah person, that the Anthony Robbins style of that personality to me at all. So I would never do that. So I could be introverted, but I still have that buoyant and energetic self. So I think to sort of sum it all, the message congruence as well as the personality congruence, I think those are the two things that, at least for me as a moral guy, I try to make sure that I live up and I live according to it.
I love it. And you know, the name of the podcast is Live Your Edge. So it's sort of what you just said, having a strong message and a living according to that message and the values that you're trying to convey to your audience. Which brings us really to the next point. Some people, when they're starting out, they may not be pursuing a career that they ultimately want to do. Maybe they are working in a field which they study for in university and their further studies, but it may not be something that in their young years that they dreamed of doing. So when you decided to come out and become a professional speaker, I'm sure there was a lot of hurdles that you had to overcome, both externally and internally. So maybe why not share a few of these hurdles with us, and which one was like the biggest thing that kind of may have kept you stuck or may have been very difficult to overcome?
Okay. So I think, as you rightly pointed out, it seems like there's a trend for younger people or millennials, so to speak, to eventually pursue a path that may be entirely irrelevant to what they studied. So I think myself, I am a pretty much a good case in point, because my course of study was actually in accounting in university. So my mom actually wanted me to be a chief financial officer. So it was towards my first year of university that I realized that while I did good in school at math, but I didn't foresee that I would have a future with numbers. So that was how I started to forge a career in professional speaking. And I think if you call yourself as a professional speaker, I think the requisite is people pay you to speak and you speak for a living, right? So in that lens and in that context, I think I faced several hurdles as well. I mean, one, the biggest hurdle was, who the hell is going to pay a 20-something to speak to professionals, qualified people in their 30s, in their 40s, and their 50s, right? And to be honest, I still face that all the way up to today. I mean, to be really transparent, at the starting days, I would have to totally accept no's, multiple no for every yes that I put out there. And the first biggest hurdle was this lack of perceived credibility, lack of perceived results, lack of perceived track record. So that was that biggest hurdle. I think the second hurdle was being a young person as well. I think a common denominator in all businesses is you need to get to know more people, and you need to get to know more qualified and people who are willing to be your sponsor and to be willing to put a good word for you, to open the door for you. So the second biggest hurdle was that I had a lack of mentors, sponsors, and people who were willing to put their head and hand out to say that, hey, Ben is a good speaker, you should consider him. And I think that was very natural because, you know, we all started from zero. I think the third biggest hurdle was a lack of self-belief. And I think that would be my biggest hurdle all the way until today. Case in point, I recently completed an engagement in Phuket as well. So I was speaking to 200 leaders from the financial consultancy industry. And I think for me, although I've been speaking for the 11 years, there are still times whereby I ask myself, do I deserve this? Do I deserve this stage? Is my message important enough? Am I successful enough to even like share them or teach them something? And I think this is what we call as the classic imposter syndrome. And I think today that's still the biggest hurdle that I face. In spite and despite of, you know, you shared in my bio, I did all of that, been featured on media over 60 times, published a book, speak at 15 different huge organizations. But I think for me, that's the biggest hurdle that I still do face.
I sort of, when you said those three hurdles, like, it's as if it was sort of speaking to me, because I definitely feel that the same way you're feeling right now, which is this imposter syndrome. And I think part of it stems from, I think millennials all alike can resonate with this. When I say there's a part of us that feels that we are unworthy of that success, and part of us fear success more than we fear failing. So I can completely understand that those three things actually sort of are intertwined, right? And one of them is self-belief, and the other one is lack of credibility and lack of a support networks, and all of them. As a young millennial, we all have these blocks. And what advice would you give to, say, a millennial that's just starting off and they want to really pursue their dream? Well, it might not be as a professional speaker, but of course, speaking might be involved in the future. What type of advice would you give them?
Yeah, so I think I routinely get invited to share my journey, and the pieces of advice that I would share are usually still the same. The first thing that I would usually say is, try not to get overly consumed in this whole motivational and rah-rah thing such that you forget your basics, right? So I know of people who claim to be hustlers and listen to Gary Vee and Tony Robbins, and they're forever on podcasts, video cards, YouTube, and they have it on their phone, the wallpapers of their phone. But I think the basics for, if you want to realize your dream, I think the basics number one is to validate it. So for me, validation is really to get the most basic and workable, as well as, you know, at least slightly presentable version of what you want to do, put it out there into the market and get feedback, right? So for me, when I wanted to do, like, for example, public speaking as well as professional speaking, my prototype that I needed to validate was really a 30-minute speech. And I had to go out there and I would say, hey, whether you pay me or not, doesn't matter. I just need a stage. I need human, warm beings to listen to me. And if they laugh, if they give me good feedback, I think that's great and that's wonderful. And even if they do, that's still feedback, right? So I think if young people are overly consumed by the ideals as well as the motivation as well as the high spirit of, you know, all this good talk as well as the inspirational talk, and to the extent that they neglect validating their ideas, I think that's one of the things that I would advise and strongly advise against. So first piece of advice, validate, test out your ideas. And this is the only best way to grow as a person, as well as to realize your dreams and to take your one big step towards your dream. I think the second piece of advice I would usually say is, as a young person, you need to take stock of what you have and what you don't have. So I think as a younger person, what you do have is you have a lot more energy. You have a lot more resources at your disposal. Your ability to learn, I think, given such times that we live in, it's completely BS if you say that you don't know how to do a certain thing, because you can go to YouTube and you can learn how to fix anything from a broken sink to a toilet bowl to even gadgets, right? So there's nothing you cannot learn under the sun. But and furthermore, what you do have as well is you have this large propensity to take risks when you're in your 20s. So in your 20s, what's the worst that could happen if you do fail, right? The worst that could happen is, you know, you head back to your parents. I mean, in probably different in the West, but at least in Asia, you still live with your parents to your like late teens, 20s. And, you know, the worst that could happen, you know, you go hungry for a few months, right? Versus if you're in your 30s and 40s and 50s, when you do have a life partner, a children, you have your mortgage, your car, you have a lot more to lose, right? So in your 20s, you have a huge propensity to take risks. But on the other hand, what you don't have are mentorship, networks, life experiences. And I think what I did consciously to accelerate my learning was, as early as 16, 17 years old, I was seeking out mentors and people whom I said, hey, you know, he looks kind of legit. He looks kind of interesting. He's doing great work. You know, maybe I should reach out to him or her for a coffee chat and just like try to get establish a meaningful relationship. And that was how I started. And I think the second piece of advice is you don't need to do it all alone. Seek out great people to support you in your entire journey. So those two things are what I hugely and always live by.
Awesome stuff. And today's topic is actually, we brought you mentioned that you started off in public speaking at a young age. And today both of us are trying to make a case that a millennial should learn public speaking as soon as possible and use it in their career, whether they are going to be an entrepreneur, business owner, or work in corporate, or even become a professional speaker, that it's a form of leverage to get them to the next stage of their career. So let's talk a bit more about the importance of public speaking, because maybe some of the audience may not know exactly what are some of the benefits of spending time developing their public speaking skills.
Okay. So I think I would do with this whole topic from the sharing of a senior of mine from my university. So he's gainfully employed in a huge organization. I think it's with one of the fast-moving consumer goods company, and he does HR development, right? So in the case study of him, one would assume and associate and think that, you know, he's a corporate HR guy, you know, he just needs to go through the checkboxes and, you know, why bother doing something as extroverted, as overt as public speaking, right? So, and we talk about leverage. So let me tell you what it has done for him. So I noticed when I connected with him over LinkedIn a few years ago, he was kind of low profile, but it seems like over the past few years, he sort of upped the ante, as well as he started to speak at conferences and he started to present, he started to write a lot, and he did what we commonly understood as, you know, thought leadership, right? So he was a leader in terms of, for example, trying to engage people on the whole topic of human resources. And I think if I would crystallize what he did as well as a success, the long and short of it was that he got promoted to a much bigger role in his organization. He was headhunted, and he is now one of the youngest HR directors in his industry, in his niche. So if I were to sort of deconstruct, I think what public speaking allows you to do is a few things. I mean, one, from the perception angle, people on stage are usually being put in high or well regard. So by the very virtue that you are invited on stage, or rather you create a stage for yourself, you know, whichever way works for you, by the very fact that you are on stage, I think the level of perception vis-a-vis people off stage is that you are seen as someone who has a valuable message to share. You are in a more influential position. Well, all of this I know is I'm generalizing a lot, but that's just at the very high level. I think on a second level, on a very strategic level, whether you're self-employed, you're entrepreneur, or you're a corporate employee, public speaking allows you to sort of develop your thought process as well as your mastery in a certain domain or subject matter. Because why so? Because I think the whole act of speaking forces you to be clear about what you're speaking. Because if you do try to fudge through your speech, people will see through you, and during questions and answer, you know, you lose it, right? So if you are someone who is serious about speaking, you invest the hour and time to prepare, chances are generalizing again, on a strategic level, you're honing your craft, and you allow yourself to deepen yourself into this whole craft such that you can be a teacher. And this, I can't recall the saying. I think the best way to learn is to teach, right? So when you're able to teach, you learn immensely. And again, in a whole spirit of improvement, if you're able to put that learning on stage into off stage, I think that puts you as a professional with a lot of edge. And I think the third thing is, I would say in such times we live in a time whereby we need to be Googleable, right? We need to be found through Google, through LinkedIn, through Twitter as well, right? If you do enough speaking, it allows you to repurpose your content into content that you can put in into your social profiles, videos as well. So I think these are the three key reasons. I mean, one is this this whole perception thing. The second thing is the whole process of speaking is a form of teaching. As well as the third one is that the leverage comes from you being able to create multiple documentations of your expertise online that allows people who don't know you to see you in a very strong light as well.
Excellent tips and a roadmap for people that want to know why public speaking should be sort of added into their skill set. And I think what you mentioned about when you're on stage, the perception is you are an authority, so it alleviates one of the hurdles that we discussed earlier, which is the credibility aspect. And by virtue, it will naturally help out with taking care of the other two hurdles, which is the self-belief and the support. So how does one get started if they want to pick up public speaking? What type of resources are at their disposal?
So I would usually say, I think for anyone to get started on speaking is to speak, right? So I think people oftentimes have this impression that public speaking means that I have to speak to hundreds and thousands of people at one time and at the start. And for me, I think public speaking is all about getting comfortable with the uncomfortable. And for example, if you work in a corporation, can you put up your hands when they need volunteers to share their thoughts? In a town hall or in a meeting.
That's public speaking. Or if you are running a meeting, would you put your hand up to sort of be the meeting chairperson or to run a meeting? So those are what I would say as these are, I would say, unplanned, informal speaking opportunities. I would say if you have already done all that and you feel it's still not helping you enough, I think the second thing would be to find planned speaking opportunities or planned speaking moments, right? So Gilbert and I both come from Toastmasters, or we came from Toastmasters, and Toastmasters remain as one of the most enduring and positive environments for you to practice public speaking. So if you're new to speaking and you need stage time, you need a place whereby you are comfortable making mistakes. You know, those are the places where you would not be judged for making mistakes. In fact, you would be commended and you would be uplifted for whatever mistakes, and as well as, more importantly, you know, the strengths of your speaking. So I think that's the second thing. The planned speaking opportunities can be milked from organizations like Toastmasters, to voluntary associations like the Lions Club, to Rotary, to your alumni associations, to your professional associations. They routinely need people to be in front of people, whether in a hosting capacity or a speaker or presenter capacity. So sometimes you're just like one question away from being able to share your insights. And this question I often ask when I go to social networks is, hey, I happen to speak on millennials and I've been engaged by companies A, B, and C. Now, do you think this message would be of any value to your members? You know, just by asking this question, it has opened up so many doors to me. And of course, in my professional work, sometimes it starts with, you know, doing a showcase presentation and they say, hey, you know, what Ben shared in half an hour, 1 hour seems really, really helpful and valuable. What does it take to engage him on a continual basis? And that's where the whole money conversation starts. So that's the second thing. I think planned speaking opportunities count for a lot. I think third and most important thing is to get started as a speaker as well. Sometimes you can only see so much of yourself, right? So I would say invest in mentors. And mentors could be an electronic mentor. And this is what I still do until today. I video record all my speeches and presentations, and I try to watch myself in action. Trust me, the first few moments are moments that you totally cringe at yourself. You know, you can't stand watching yourself or listening yourself and your video. But I think once you get past that, you start to put yourself into the shoes of your audience. You start to say, hey, you know, I thought this joke was really funny, but it didn't sound funny. Or, now, I'm not a really funny guy, but hey, I got my audience laughing every other minute, right? So that's the reality that you get through reviewing your videos. And I think aside from an electronic mentor, I think seek out human mentors as well. People who have been there, done that, people who enjoy the stage, or people who have not enjoyed the stage but still make a living on stage, or people who have overcome their own journeys as well. I think if you have a strong support system, as what I mentioned previously, the whole journey will be a lot smoother for you.
Yeah, it's the fastest way to learn is to just go and find a stage or like you said, make a stage. And aside from having a physical mentor, there's also mentors that you can find through printed materials like books.
Yeah, totally.
And you wrote a book on public speaking.
Yeah.
Called In Spirit, right?
Yep.
What is it about, actually?
Yeah, so In Spirit is actually a real word. So it's not a word that I coined out of thin air. So In Spirit is actually a verb that stands for to breathe life into, to put energy and spirit into. So I think when I wrote this book, there were a few backstories. I mean, the first one was that I wrote it when I was about 6 years into my speaking career, and I had clients asking me to say, hey, Ben, learning from you has been great. Do you have a book to offer? And ideally, do you have like other speakers that we can learn from? Right. And they started to ask me, like, say, specifically, since we're based in Asia and they're Asians, they were starting to ask me as well, who in Asia you think are great speakers that we can learn from and emulate as well. Of course, there are many great speakers from the West, like Barack Obama, like Steve Jobs, and people like that. But they wanted to sort of be closer to home. So that put me onto a mission. Like, one, I should start writing something and put my thoughts into a consolidated place. And then two, in terms of the speaking world, I realized that a lot has been written about public speaking, but from the perspective of a Westerner. So who are the Asians that are great on stage as well? So from where I was based in Singapore, I started to dig into my network and I got connected with 12 different Asian CEOs or entrepreneurs. And they come from a company like Bain & Company, LinkedIn, to a few other established companies in where I lived in Singapore as well as in Asia. So what I did was to collect their insights, ask them how they carry themselves on stage, what's the role of speaking. I mean, all those questions that you just asked me, you know, I asked them in varying forms to them as well. And I put all of their insights into a book. And that was really the backstory of this book. And I think the gist for me is In Spirit is really what I believe public speaking should be about, right? Like I told you, In Spirit is to breathe life into. And I think the best speakers are actually those speakers that really, really do care. There's always a common thing that people say, you know, I do get butterflies in my stomach, or Ben, do you still get nervous before a speech? And I say, I still do. And I think the moment that you stop getting nervous before you go up on stage, I think that may be a bad thing, because maybe you've grown complacent and you think that's just going to be another going through the process, going through the motion kind of thing for you. So I think every speech should be intentional, and every speech should be one whereby you try to allow people to come into the seats with whatever state, but to live with a higher and more uplifted state where they have a message, they have an important prerogative, they walk away with an agenda that can improve and better than life. So I think that's the whole notion by which I live my life as a speaker, as well as I propose the speaking as a concept to my clients as a speaking coach as well.
I think I love the advice where you mentioned that having butterflies in your stomach or getting nervous before a speech is really a way to signify that you care. That you care about the message that you're delivering to this audience.
Yep.
Do you have, if there's one tip from this book that it has really like been a cornerstone of your career, which tip would that be?
Yeah. So I think in the book I shared numerous tips and numerous advice. But I think the biggest one for me was always to listen to your inner voice, right? So the inner voice is really your inner conversations that you have with yourself in your head whenever you do anything that's stressful or intense or challenging. And for me, I think it's almost a transcendent experience for me to be on stage, because I think for a lot of times when I grew up as a speaker, I would always practice a lot of self-censorship, and I would always ask myself, is this safe to say? Is this appropriate to say? Of course, there are general sort of commonsensical limits to that. So you don't want to go on stage to spout expletives or say that, hey, Mr. CEO, you look really ugly, this kind of thing, right? But what I'm trying to say is your inner voice is sometimes that voice that tells you to trust yourself, to say what you feel like saying at that very point moment of your speech. And I think for me, when I trust my inner voice enough in moments where it matters, I think that makes all the difference. So for example, there are times whereby I address a certain group of professionals. And I still recall I was speaking to a group of financial professionals, and I was talking to them of importance of being good financial consultants. And I related a story of how someone got cheated of their money, and it was because of a malpractice. And I was like sort of hesitating to listen to my inner voice, right? My stage persona would be, you know, just say the good things. But my inner voice would tell me that, Ben, you need to tell them the truth. You need to let them know what you really feel inside. And I trusted my inner voice, and I just said something along the lines whereby I told them, as financial consultant, your primary role is really to consult people on their money. And the whole premise of being a consultant, or people giving consultancy and advice, is that you are in a position of trust. And we should never allow your trust to be misused or to be overused or to be abused. I said something along the lines, and I think it totally resonated, because throughout the conference, everyone was speaking about the nice, the uplifting things, you know, the positive things. But my inner voice at that point in time said that, you know, you should say something that really hits you, because what hits you will be what hits them. And I think the truth was that people actually started, you know, getting a bit emotional. I had a few standing ovations. And then after the speech, people came up to me and said, you know, Ben, thank you so much, because that was the message I needed to hear. And no one seemed to dare to tell us that, even our CEO, right? So I took a risk to tell that message, because I also stood the risk that I would never be able to get hired at that organization ever again. So I know it's a bit long drawn out, but one of the things that I do mention in my book was sometimes your inner voice may be the most powerful voice and the message that you want to share to the world. So you got to trust that voice.
Yep. So it's really speaking your truth and, of course, living your truth.
Yeah. And I think when you are able to live your truth out, then what you speak on and speak out on stage has a lot more moral power, as well as a lot more poignance and a lot more conviction. It's like, you know, if off stage I am a fat and lazy and a person who doesn't believe in working out and I binge eat, how in the world would I be a congruent and convincing person on stage to say, you know, lead a healthy lifestyle, you know, eat your greens, you know, you got to be lean and healthy, right? So I think in the same fashion, if you want to be a powerful speaker on stage, be a powerful human being off stage. And I think when you're able to do that, I think it's a virtuous cycle that helps you to, I think in the whole collective, be a better person as well.
Awesome stuff.
Yeah.
And we're just coming to the conclusion of our episode today. Do you have any other final words for our audience who are listening today?
So I think I don't know who you are. I don't know where you'll be from. But I think we oftentimes say that life is short. Life is really short. We should live our life. But I think we don't live that message in accordance to what the message really wants us to do. So I think the best way to realize your dream is to start now. Dream big, start small, dig deep. And that was the message as well I shared in a presentation recently, which is, you know, you should always dream as big as you can, because I think the size of your dreams would then determine the canvas that you have. But start small, because I think if all you do is dream, but you don't start, and if you don't start on tangible baby steps, you know, you never get started, because this whole journey is premised on momentum. And to dig deep is to go deep into your expertise, to be a master and to gain mastery of your subject matter. So if you want to speak on AI or you want to be an AI expert, you jolly well read 20, 30, 40, 50 books about AI. You know who the experts on it. You go through your TED Talks. You speak to experts. You know the advent of technologies. You know where this whole trend is going. I think when you dig deep is where you start to realize that the depth is what makes you a valuable person. And I think for anyone, whether wanting to be a professional speaker or not, I think these three pieces of advice is what I have been sort of like trying to live my life to. Of course, there are times where I falter, but I think in most parts, I try to live by that as an adage.
And as always, to live your edge, which is living on the edge of your comfort zone and sort of looking down on from the cliff at the unknown and still knowing that it's better than not having tried.
Fully agree.
So if our audience would like to get in touch with you and find you online, where can they find you?
So you could hit me up at my website, which is www.benjaminlow, and Low is spelled as L-O-H, benjaminlow1word.sg, or you could search for me through Facebook or LinkedIn, and those are the key platforms whereby you could reach out to me. Drop me a hi, let me know what you've learned, or, you know, if you're ever coming by to Singapore or in Asia, you know, I'll be happy to host you or connect with you in person as well.
And if people would like to buy your book, can they find it on Amazon?
Yeah, it's available on Amazon as well. I think it's on-demand publishing, so you can indeed get a copy if you'd like to.
Awesome stuff. Great having you on our show, Benjamin.
Thank you so much, Gilbert. And yeah, I look forward to listening to your podcast as well and to learn from all the other amazing personalities that you have invited on your set.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. You can find more episodes every Tuesday. If you haven't done so, please subscribe for more updates as they come. Until next time.